You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 60. Today is June 16th. I'm actually recording out of Atlanta today in a hotel. Steve, you've been a father for about 1 week. We're both in kind of new places. Me, literally, you, yeah, spiritually. We got a great episode, Steve. Talking mid-June heat checks. Looking at guys who might be somewhat breaking out or worth a stream. It's kind of an interesting time of the season where we can't quite look at some of these guys as must-adds like we do in the first month, but there's still a lot of value to be had here. So we'll look back at some of the names that we've been keeping an eye on and also look ahead to some guys who are flying under the radar who could be worth an ad for your fantasy team. But thanks everybody for tuning in. Wins Above Fantasy every Thursday morning. You can find us on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter at Wins Above Pod. I'm at @Van_verified and Steve is at @Stav8818. Steve, looking forward to the episode. How's it going out there, man?
Yeah, it's great, man. Finally feels like summer. I know it was at least by me, May was like seasonably not great. April was pretty horrible. Now we're actually getting some like the heat of the summer, which it feels nice for the first few days, but then soon it's going to be like, you know, 90 and humid and you want to go right back inside to your air conditioning and your TVs to watch baseball.
Yep.
But it's an interesting time for fantasy. I think we were kind of talking off air. It's kind of like a lull, like, you know, trades are being talked, happened. Like, you know, I think I saw a tweet like, I think it was Jeff Zimmerman. He's like, whoa, only 4 of 15 teams put in bids in TGFBI this week. Like, we're getting to, like, the point where there's fatigue kicking in.
Yes.
That being said, there are a few names there that are popping up. I know we kind of talked about those pop-up guys, you know, being gone already and not actionable as they are in April. But there's some bounce backs, guys that make some changes that – It sort of is, you know, the April pop-up guys, you know, just of this section of the season, which I think is good. We got some interesting names here to talk about that I think there could be some really, really interesting moves that you could make and sort of like, oh, wow, I didn't realize this guy's doing that good.
Yeah, there's a lot there. One, it's like 96 and I'm chewing on air here in Atlanta, so walking everywhere in the city has been a blast for this work trip I'm on. But yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, that it's like not only are there some new guys who might have been called up, we'll talk about a few of those, there's some that are just kind of finding their way into playing time opportunity or putting production together where you kind of have to give it the stress test and ask if it's real. And then there's a new element that you don't get in April, which is kind of those bounce backs or people who have kind of moved on too quickly. So we'll talk about all that. And yeah, we've got a really good list of about a dozen names here. But Steve, we wanted to kind of start with just kind of framing this up with what we've seen so far this season. And I think we've had a few shows. Of course, this, you know, we're probably on episode, what, 10 of this season. So we want to give actionable advice. Past couple weeks have been high-level show topics. But we have done an April ads that we did. We did hot and cold starts as an episode. We did StatCast breakouts. So we've done a variety of shows already this season where we've thrown out a lot of names. So we are always in the spirit of accountability. And I guess to start with the April ads check-in, we wanted to review some of these because some of these guys are relevant to the discussion, and otherwise it might give us a little bit of a framework on how to basically assess some of these recommendations, because not all of them are going to hit. But to start with April, Steve, I know we got a list of names that we kind of recommended as April ads. Does anyone jump out here for you that we wanted to hit on? I know we talked about from first base position, Daniel Vogelbach, who just returned. He's available still in some industry leagues. Eric Hosmer as well, who had the ridiculous start to the season, has kind of cooled off. Nate Lowe, who is kind of been the one all along that we thought had the StatCast stuff. He kind of changed his profile as more of a contact hitter. Seems to be putting it all together now. Jonah Heim at catcher. Santiago Espinal, great lineup in Toronto. Kind of been steady on his production. It seems like he's very much still worthy of a roster. And then Jorge Mateo, who you've outlined is not just kind of a speed-only rabbit, but possibly more than one category there. From the April ad show, is there anything that you want to kind of highlight before we kind of continue through some of the names we've talked about this season and ultimately get into some new recommendations too?
It's kind of like 50-50, right? Like there's some good, really good takeaways there. I think Jonah Heim is like a one catcher. It's pretty clear. You know, he's got close to an 800 OPS, has, you know, seven or eight homers and even chipped in a steal here and there. And it's definitely been, you know, if you're rostering Jonah Heim as your primary catcher, even in one catcher leagues, like you're doing fine. Like there's nothing, which is for the, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum on the show. That's good for the catcher position. Santiago Espinal, that's a good one. He's been just as good and is kind of exactly what we said, like a great way to get a share of that Blue Jays lineup and has been good. Vogelbach and Hosmer are kind of like, you know, the warning signs, although, you know, on the show that we talk about next, like we were kind of sour on Hosmer waiting for that shoe to drop, and it really has. I think he's hitting like 200 over the last 2 weeks or something like that. So it's been pretty tough. And Jorge Mateo, you know, he's been great for speed. Not much else. I know there's been a few homers, but the batting average just really isn't there, and neither is the on base for a guy that, you know, it's hard to steal bases when you don't get on base. It's like, you know, the old saying. But The one that's most interesting, I think, for now is Nate Lowe. He's been really good the last few weeks and is actually starting to show some of that power that, you know, when he came up as a prospect with the Rays, like, it was a pretty big deal. And, like, it was like, oh, this could be, like, a 30-homer hitting first baseman. There's been some launch angle issues, like, you know, hit the ball hard but just hasn't barreled up the ball. And he might be starting to do that. So that's a name that I really keep an eye on, and it might have just taken a little bit longer than we hoped for this year. But, you know, overall it kind of shows, like, it's going to be like 50-50, right? Like, yeah. And that's what makes this hard, because you got to hold on to the guys that are going to stick and then drop the ones that aren't. But
in your defense, you were also quick to say Vogelbach, we've seen this before. Yep. And, you know, so I know I was kind of pushing because I'm still starry-eyed from that one month he had where he had like 11 homers or whatever.
Yeah, with the Mariners back in like 2018 or 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, but Lowe, you said it. I mean, it's like he's finding, you know, the power with, I think it's like four homers in the past 2 weeks. And prior to that, he had put together kind of a Hosmer-esque contact season. So it seems like, as we discussed, it's marrying it all up. It's like what Christian Yelich did as well. But if he can pull back kind of the power he had when he was a prospect with the newfound contact rates and everything, then it's a really good story for Nate Lowe. And then I think Santiago Espinal is one that we can't brush over. I mean, the past 2 weeks, 1045 OPS, pretty much playing every day. As I say that, I know that he just got a scratch, but other than that, it's like, you know, he plays 9 out of 10 days. Moving up in that lineup, I think he's been batting like fifth for the Blue Jays. So I think that one's still a really good one that we liked, and he's just 55% rostered. So kind of a reminder that he's
Relevant. The same thing stands for Espinal. Like it's a great play. It's like that rostership percentage should be higher, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally agree. So skipping ahead to the next episode where we looked at kind of the hot and cold starts to look back on, we talked about Kyle Wright, we talked about Eric Hosmer, and we talked about a variety of holds, mentioning Marcus Semien, Trevor Story, Tyler O'Neill, and Joey Votto, who's a name we're going to come back to in this episode. But what are your takeaways? I mean, more from this bucket, Steve, that pretty much a lot of these have kind of turned out the way that conventional wisdom suggested. So I know there's a lot of people out there that kind of, you know, turn a brow at StatCast data and are quick to complain about like a slow Marcus Semien start. But this is another one that if the underlying metrics and the track record suggested it, most of these bets kind of turned out the way you wanted to, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like a lesson in like just the name value. Like that's all you really need to look at. Like with Simeon and Story, I think that was more of them getting used to their new team. We've talked about how guys press and chase, especially in Simeon's case, Story's too. Because like you looked at their underlying numbers in the first month and month and a half for Simeon, it was like, yeah, there's not much encouraging there. And Story was striking out. Like it seemed like three times a game for all of April. It's like, what happened? It's like, just give them a second, especially in new environments, right? And it's been great for anyone that's bought low or held for Story and for Simeon. It's kind of just like, all right, like these guys are not going to be like you, it's like look at the back of the baseball card for them. Yeah. For O'Neill, like you know, I think maybe he was battling something. You might know a little bit better than me, being tapped into Cardinal Nation, but it does seem like that shoulder was really causing issues, because he hit that homer in opening day. It looked like everything was good to go, and then kind of really, really struggled. Right. But since he's been back, he's hitting .324 with a homer and two steals. Like, you know, that's what you're going to expect from Tyler O'Neill, and he's been hitting the ball hard again. So maybe there was that injury there. And Votto, we can get into it later, just because he's a name on the list. But yeah, it's just another one that's like Votto. Yeah. We've talked about it. It's like, you know, he's Joey Votto. He's going to figure it out.
Yeah, I think with the exception of Votto, this list of names with Simeon, Story, and O'Neill have historically been pretty streaky guys.
Yes.
And ones,
yes,
who,
great call,
you know, plenty of 0-for-4 days, and then when they do make their production, they're going to have monster days. And that's maybe the story of all these, is like, you know, in the first month we have to stop, you know, going crazy next year if, yeah, it's a guy like Acuna who's batting like 225. Like if you have a little bit of an elevated strikeout rate, there will be some peaks and valleys, but the peaks are worth kind of struggling through the valleys, right?
And for guys that are streaky like Simeon, like Story, if they do get off, like those cold starts and cold streaks could be worse, just because like when things are going normal, there's going to be a rough patch, right? Like, yep, up and down. So maybe that's just something to consider with guys that have, like, you know, neither of them are like super high strikeout guys. Maybe that this applies for O'Neill, but for Simeon and Story, I think it was more of like getting used to the new environment, probably pressing too much, like we've talked about with new teams and new contracts.
Yeah, totally agree. And yeah, the last one that we kind of had discussed were the Statcast breakouts on our May 12th episode. We talked about Christian Yelich, Christian Walker, Rowdy Tellez, and Gleyber Torres. Torres definitely looks back. That power, mm-hmm, has sustained in a way that we haven't seen since 2019. Tellez has kind of been interesting, where he's on a power drought right now. He hasn't hit a home run in probably the longest stretch of this season for him, but the contact and kind of the hit tool is still there. He doesn't strike out so much that you can't pallet it. I know he's kind of a drop candidate for a lot of people right now. I think you got to give him two or three more series and see if that power comes back around. And then Christian Walker and Christian Yelich has kind of been a little bit of a mixed bag, Steve. Like, what do you see with those two? I know Yelich kind of hasn't gone the way that we really got excited about on that 5 or 6 game stretch.
Yeah, since he's been back in the leadoff spot, it's been pretty interesting. This just might be who he is, though. You know, it might be like a 760 OPS with 18 homers and 20 steals, which is still really good, right? Like,
right,
you know, I know it's not like, oh, go out and buy low on Christian Yelich, like you're going to get an absolute league winner or anything like that. But it's probably somewhere in between, which isn't that bad. Walker, he was a must add. I think, you know, despite the lowish average, like he's up to what, 16 or 17 homers. So like, he is providing absolute value for you no matter what. I know I have him in a few leagues, and it's like, you know, you're seeing a homer from like once every 3 days. Tellez, I actually just dropped today for Kendall Graveman with the news that Liam Hendricks is out indefinitely. He's just still not hitting lefties well, and they're playing him, which is good. Like they were talking about on Rates and Barrels, how like you can kind of see what teams are doing as far as determining if they're a platoon player. Like, are they giving him shots? Like, and they are, which is good, but there just hasn't been the results there. And without the power, I'm sure there'll be another run coming for him, though. Like, if he hits a home run, like, there might be, you know, three in the next 5 days. So definitely be watching that for sure. And Torres, like, he looks like the old, like, pretty much the old Gleyber Torres, at least, you know, 2018 Gleyber Torres, not maybe 38 homers, but he's already passed, what, the last 2 years combined for homers. So
right.
Torres, I know he was sitting out there on wires, like, in mid-April, and it just looks like a great ad and should continue to be, you know, a value in that Yankee lineup all summer long.
Yeah, and I think the impetus on walking through all these is to just kind of serve as a reminder that as we talk through these names, it's our job to kind of grasp at straws, see who might be out there that could be actionable. Not every single one of these is going to be a home run, but enough, if you take enough shots here, you will kind of luck into the Gleyber Torres, you know, the Nathaniel Lowe, the Santiago Espinal. And that a lot of times it's part of just that process of looking at who's been hot, kind of going through that process of stream and see what happens and checking kind of the back of the baseball card, like you mentioned, alongside what we've seen this season, whether it's, you know, changes to a pitch mix or a swing change or Statcast data. So we'll go through all of it. But anything else to add, Steve, before we kind of jump in?
No, I think you sort of summed it up perfectly. Like, I don't know. I feel like this is kind of the meat and bones of our show, like these sort of player analysis and episodes. And like, it's kind of like good to look back and like use it as a litmus test. It's like, all right, here's a guy we talked about. We hit on a good amount. And like, there were some, you know, warning. We try to find the warning flags and like red flags on some of the guys like Hosmer to be like, okay, this, he looks just like Tellez and Walker, but maybe you should go with one of the other two. Which is what we try to do, and I think we've been all right at it. So let's do it some more.
Let's do it. So we're starting off with a not very sexy name in Kyle Farmer, shortstop for the Cincinnati Reds. You know, he definitely feels like kind of a utility middle infield guy for fantasy rosters, but he's been playing every day with the Reds, batting fifth right now. And with India coming back, Votto coming around, that lineup might not be as brutal as, you know, we viewed it in the first month of the season. And past month, Farmer's looked pretty hot, batting .403 with an 1100 OPS. And maybe the best part about it all, Steve, is the plate discipline with just 9 strikeouts in the past month versus 6 walks. It's kind of the best part of Farmer's game, but he's mixed in 4 homers and 2 steals in that time frame with 20 RBIs. So things are looking, you know, on the surface, very good for Kyle Farmer. If you've, you know, got a shortstop who's gone down for injury, or you just need to kind of mix, you know, a contact type of hitter into your roster, what are you seeing with Farmer here? Do you think this is kind of a stream now, see what happens, or are you rushing out for this one? Where are you at with Farmer?
I think so. I think it's a stream now and see what happens. The Reds overall have been, like, you know, better than what they were in April. Like, I know that's not saying much because they were, what, like 2-23 or something to start the season, something ridiculous like that. Like, they took like 2 or 3 from the Braves and like lost 20 in a row, which is hilarious in its own right. But yeah, I know Farmer had a good stretch last year too. He still had 16 homers, so like the pop is kind of there. Like, that's not bad, considering, you know, the environment, because that he's still on this same pace with this ball and what the run environment's been for last year. And, you know, what he's done so far is 11% better than league average at a 111 WRC plus. The contact percentage and O swings are both better, so that sort of backs up the gain in plate discipline. So, yeah, like, I don't see any reason why you can't sort of prorate out what he's done to, like, a 15-10-275 season, which is pretty good in deep leagues especially. Like, 15 teams or more, Kyle Farmer's probably already gone, and if not, should be. Like, he is definitely an ad if he's still out there.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird season for him as a baseball player, because he's been pretty brutal in the field, and last year that was kind of where he shined. I think under the hood, the outside of plate discipline, what's been the biggest change is that he's hitting the ball harder, which isn't saying much. His hard hit last year was a 31.9%, which is not good at all. This year it's up to 39.4%, which is pretty good.
Better. Yeah, that's good.
Yep. And so I think, yeah, I think this is definitely one, certainly if you have a team need, where it's worth the fill. The only thing to kind of throw some cold water on it for him, and I know we'll talk about Votto, is they do have a little bit of a tough stretch coming up with the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Giants, so some pretty good pitching staffs there. But I think overall, yeah, this one I would vote as kind of a stream, and if it starts turning nasty, because the other underlying metrics like barrel rate still like sub 20th percentile and everything. So
he's a great deep league stuff and things guy.
Exactly. Perfectly said. So let's move over to Adam Duvall. And this was one from our show preseason, Steve, with Ariel Cohen, where he was huge on Duvall as one of the best values for projections of the draft in terms of ADP. Duvall kind of came out struggling mightily, so he's pretty universally available, just batting 209 on the year. But in the past 2 weeks, batting 286 with a 1080 OPS and five homers. This is Duvall, right? I mean, yeah. there's ups and downs with Ozzie Albies, unfortunately, going on the 60-day IL. There's going to probably be a little bit of lineup opportunity for Atlanta. What do we think for Duvall here? Is this one that you're rushing out to, or similar to Farmer, where kind of add based on team need?
Anywhere I need power, which is basically everywhere this year, I'd be looking to grab Adam Duvall if he's not already scooped up. Like, this guy goes on insane heaters. He's starting one right now with the, I think it's three homers in the last five games, five in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that despite the awful start, like, Duvall still may come close to that those preseason projections. Like, rest of the season, everywhere has got him from 12 to 18 homers. Like, I lean closer to 18 at least. Like, I would not be shocked if Duvall got to 30 homers by the end of the year, one way or the other. Like, sure, it might not be the 38 homers and league-leading 113 RBIs, but, this sort of happened last year when he got traded to Atlanta and went on that run with the Braves. Like, right? Like, the Braves didn't, like, reach 500 until, like, August, and, like, part of that reason was Duvall and Soler going absolutely off. So, you could speak to it. It'll probably get a lot hotter. In Atlanta, it's a humid city, and that's where the humidor should have a big impact, at least positively, for guys like this. Mm-hmm. Power hitters, fly ball hitters. So I really like Duvall and think that there is another 2021 like run in his bat coming. Not to the full effect, but close to it.
Yeah, I think a couple other things to like about Duvall is, for a guy who you kind of look at as just kind of like a power specialist, you'd think that he's just kind of Deadpool, and he actually hits like to all fields, which is really solid. And I mean, I know right now for pull power, you kind of want that, but right now a lot of his home runs have been center and even opposite field. So he has that working in his favor. And on top of that, I think another thing is, like, when you look at the barrel rate, the past three or four seasons, it's been elevated like around like a 15%. And so far this year, that's been down at like a 10.9%. So I think even like I feel like he's more of a, his natural skill set is a barrel rate that is closer to like a 14 to 16% range. So I think there could even be improvement from what we've seen. So I'm totally with you that I think right now is a perfect time to kind of pounce on Duvall and ride the power train here. Anything else to?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up the rolling barrel percentage, which I would think is like on an upward trend, but Let me just have
a savant. Yeah, and while you're looking that up, he's just 36% rostered in Yahoo League. So, I mean, very, very available for Duvall. If he's out there on the wire, I think it's a great opportunity to add.
Yeah, the WOBA is just like a straight, strict line up. Basically, since like the calendar has, it's since, his 200th plate appearance. So with that, the exit velocity and launch angle are just the same sort of way. He's finally above league average on exit velocity in that same timeline. And the launch angle too, it's trending up. So everything that looks good or that you want to see, trending in the right direction for Duvall is going that way. So, I'm buying another midsummer heater for Duvall, so for sure.
He'll probably add some this weekend. Go out and grab him. He's in Wrigley against the Cubs this weekend. So as this show airs, that's a nice power streamer there for Duvall. So moving over to Joey Votto. We talked about Kyle Farmer, so teammate here, Votto. This one's just incredible, Steve. I can't believe Votto is still just 67% rostered in Yahoo leagues. We know that Votto's a points league monster. He always has been. I know he's kind of traded out some plate discipline for power, but after one of the worst starts with what happened in April with Votto, those who held on are completely being rewarded. The past month, he is batting .282 with a .1019 OPS, 15 walks, 16 strikeouts, 5 homers, 19 RBI. Everything under the hood looks like this is basically a more extreme version of what happened last year. And at this point, I just don't understand how you're not rushing out to add. Like, Votto was practically 100% rostered after drafts. He's now, if you just eliminated that first month, he's showing everything that we were hoping he could be. So this one to me is just underline, circle it. I know I'm biased. He's my chalkboard guy, but we were both interested going into the season. I think this one is just a no-brainer for me, but what do you think on Votto and how he's turned it around this season?
Yeah, I mean, it was that bad in April, and then he was out for a long time, which, who knows what Joey Votto did to fix his swing during that time. That's probably more of a good thing than anything, but yeah, it's another thing like Duvall. Like, he's on it, and another one's coming, like, stretches go. He's been on the record saying, like, I'm ready to have the hottest stretch of my career, like, power wise coming up, like, and it looks like he's primed to do that. So, the 33% of leagues that he's still out there in, like, I would make a move now and sort of get ready for this run here. He should be a starting first baseman in pretty much any league.
Yeah, the hard hit rate says it all. In April, 26%, brutal. In May, 52%, and in June, 51%. Those clips in May and June are basically top 10 players in the league. So, yeah, this is Votto, and I think he's pretty much back. Now, if the barrel rate can tick back up, because it has since he started, but it was 20% in April. It's been 13% in June, so you take the middle of it and it's pretty much 95th percentile type of barrel stuff since that brutal month. So yeah, I think it's rush to the wire and add Votto if he's somehow still available in your leagues. All right, we are going to take a quick ad break and we will be right back after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Steve, Garrett Cooper for the Miami Marlins. This one, maybe I'm being unfair here, but lumping him in with Kyle Farmer is just a name that you feel like is always out there. You're not getting too excited about. You think you know him, but Cooper is impressive, man. When you look at what he did in the short season he had last year, he was out for the whole second half with an elbow sprain, but he looked good. And you mentioned him, I think it was last episode, but he is certainly breaking out this year. In the past month, batting 390 with a 1020 OPS, also just 16 strikeouts in that time, which is, you'll take that, plate discipline. A couple homers, 15 RBIs, but batting in a great spot in that order, even though it's not the best lineup context. What are your thoughts on Garrett Cooper as a help for a corner infield or a first base hole?
Now, this is not really fair because the game totals aren't great, but Garrett Cooper's WRC plus across the last three seasons, 133, 134, 145. Like, wow. What? Garrett wow. Cooper? Yeah, it was just 34 games in the shortened 2020 season, 71 last year and 53 this year. But, like, this guy can hit, man. Like, it's been mid 800 OPSs over the last three seasons, you know, and the season before that he popped 15 homers in 107 games. So I think that Garrett Cooper, as long as he could stay healthy, which has been his issue, is going to provide a lot of value the rest of the season. The strikeout rate's down, the contact percentage is the best it's been of his career, chase rate's the best percentage of his career, and he's got a low homer to fly ball rate. He's, you know, been around 20% for his career, and he's got just 10.5% this year, so there might be some more homers coming as that sort of regresses the mean there. The exit velocity numbers are all in line. Like, yeah, man, 10.6% bower rate for Garrett Cooper, sign me up.
Yeah, I was just impressed with the splits as well, that in past seasons, if you wanted to nitpick, there has been some struggles against right-handed pitchers. This season, he's batting 315 with an 873 against right-handed pitchers. So another one who hits to all fields. And yeah, I think this is all systems go, that very, very worthy of a stream, and see if he can kind of keep it up. But yeah, I just don't know that. I feel like this is a rare high floor type of guy at this stage in the season.
That's it's another like boring name, right? Like, you know, right. if it was somebody else, like, you know, I don't know, a higher rated prospect that we were waiting on, there would be a lot more hype around him. But I think Garrett Cooper is just boring enough, at least name value wise, that there could be a lot of actual value to be had here.
Yeah, and extremely available, 37% rostered. It's going down because he missed like two games from the COVID IL, but his production has not tailed off at all. I think he's batting like 400 in the past couple of weeks. So, yeah, this one is extremely available, and I think it's a high floor option where he's not going to kill you on off weeks, but plenty of production in between there. So, yeah, I don't know if you got anything else on Cooper, but we're both thumbs up on this
one.
Yep,
I think he has first base and outfield eligibility in most places too, which is a nice little combo there.
So let's move over to the Cubs and talk about Christopher Morel, who this one is a little surprising for me, Steve. I know he's extremely young. I mean, we've seen very little. He's just 22 years old. But in the minors, his numbers don't, like, completely jump off. Like, the average has kind of come up and down. He's shown that he's kind of a power speed guy. He's had some big seasons. I mean, you know, in 100 games at Double A in Chicago, 17 homers, 16 steals is great. That was with a 220 average. But it's been really impressive what he's done in the 25 games since he's been up with the Cubs. Batting 277 with a 357 OBP and a 475 slug. And three homers, six steals so far for Morel. And certainly on local broadcasts, they're talking about just all of the rumblings that this is going to be kind of a cornerstone for the new build for the Cubs. What are you seeing with Morel, Steve? Because part of me is a little apprehensive that it's just not as good as we've seen. But I think, you know, at the same time, what he's, I guess, based on his minor league numbers, but what he's done so far
in the 25 games we've seen him, has looked like he might be developing as, in the majors, I guess.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me and the thing that jumps off the page is the fact that he cut his strikeout rate. When he had that good, you know, counting stat season in Double A in 2021, it came with a 29.7% strikeout rate. The walks were still there, 9.8%, but, you know, with that led to that low 220s average and just a 101 WRC plus, which is, you know, why he wasn't jumping up on any prospect lists or any big name. But in Double A, when he repeated the level to start the year, he cut that back down to 25%. It held at 26% when he was promoted to Triple A, and just nine games there, you know, had a homer and hit 257. And then when he was called up, that's held. He's striking out just 25% of the time in the majors, walking 10.3% of the time. And, you know, with that comes the power and speed and a decent average. What I'm concerned about is the adjustment. I think that's starting to come. This last week,
four strikeout game.
Yeah, four strikeout game. I mean, it was the Yankees. Like, their pitching staff has been absolutely on fire. Yeah. But, you know, he's hit 227, but it has a homer and a 761 OPS, which, if that's the adjustment week, like, that's not bad at all. So, yeah, the plate skills are what's most important. And someone in the Discord said, I think it was Christopher Weber, Swebzy, co-host of In the Deep, talked about it. It's like you kind of like guys like this because they don't have, like, the hit tool to be able to just, like, swing away and hit everything, so they need to have good plate discipline, and that's sort of what's happening here. And you pair that with a 12.2% barrel rate, a good max EV of 113 miles an hour, and yeah, you're gonna get your first stretch in the major league career putting up a 131 WRC plus. Again, I think there is going to be a bit of an adjustment period. I don't think it's going to be like a runaway rookie of the year, like this is the pace and what to expect. But it's probably a lot better than what most people thought, at least when he came up.
Yeah, and just the speed output, I think, is for real, where, you know, he's for the Cubs, they don't have much to lose, so he's definitely attempting a lot of steals. He's proven in the minors that he can put up a high volume there. So even if it, I don't know, rounds out as like a 245 type of guy, but some pop, some speed. I think you definitely look at this as a guy who could develop. He has upside, but I think the floor is kind of that Harrison Bader-esque power-speed combo with a question mark average, I guess. Speaking of Bader, let's talk about a little St. Louis Cardinal here, Steve. Brendan Donovan, who has, in Cardinals fashion, come up with kind of a utility type of role, and all through the minors kind of had some stuff and things, Ben Zobrist-y profile as well, but much better plate discipline than Morel, who we were just talking about. Kind of all throughout the minors has hovered around like a 16% strikeout rate, and he can definitely take a walk, but he is being used all around the diamond for the Cardinals, which was kind of the question with like Nolan Gorman coming up, Juan Yepez, Pujols still for like the box office factor. Is Donovan going to get the volume? But so far he kind of has, in a weird way, and batting .308 with an .807 OPS in the past month. What are your thoughts, Steve?
Man, more Cardinal devil magic, man. I think I said it on a few episodes ago, right? Like, I forget who we were talking about. Maybe it was Gorman or maybe it was Yepez, but, like, you know, Brendan Donovan is the guy who's going to be Cardinal devil magic, and that's kind of what it is. But yeah, I mean, it's an 855 OPS for a guy that doesn't hit the ball that hard. Like, that's what you know, good plate skills or elite plate skills in this case is going to do for you. Sure, there might not be much power and much speed, but like, it could be like David Fletcher-esque. He does have two steals. Like,
I was thinking Cronenworth.
Cronenworth, like a little Cronenworth. I don't know if he has that much power or speed, though. Right, like peak Cronenworth is like 2012, right? With maybe a little bit worse average. I could be wrong there, but
okay, yeah. I mean, that's fair. The power is not as high. So yeah, Fletcher might be a better one.
Peak David Fletcher, like when he was actually rostered on teams. Like, I know David Fletcher now is like not a case. Maybe, you know, there's a better comp out there, but
Well, what about LeMahieu? I mean, he's hovered around like 300 at every level of the minors. I know his projections have him as like a 260 guy. I'm not saying peak
LeMahieu, but at this point, pre-power breakout LeMahieu, right. Definitely. Yeah, that's probably a better call.
Yeah, and all around the diamond on eligibility.
10 homers maybe, 6 steals with, you know, a 300 average. Like, yeah, I buy that.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Let's notch up the speed a little bit and talk about a guy who I've been very invested in so far, Steve. I know we were texting like the moment he got called up because it was a shocker, but Michael Harris II, MH2 here down in Atlanta here for my local take. Harris, all the question marks were the fact that he got called up from AA. So skipping AAA, everyone was worried if he'd be overmatched, and he really hasn't been. I mean, the plate discipline, he's going to strike out like 25% of the time. That's kind of part of his game. But he has a good hit tool and elite speed that is just starting to appear. And this is a guy who seems extremely under-rostered for me. And I think with the fact that he's so far on the season line, batting 293 with a 783 OPS, the speed is there. He's in the nine spot, which is kind of the mini leadoff, hitting right in front of Acuna. For him to just be 27% rostered, I think Michael Harris II is criminally under-rostered, and I'm pretty excited here. But what are your thoughts on what Harris has shown in the cup of coffee so far?
I am also rostering him in my home league, so I am very invested as well. I think I also have him in the Pitcherless Staff League or one other league too. So I'm liking what I'm seeing. Like, he did well. Like, you know, I think like the first or second game he had one of those doubles in Arizona off that ridiculously high wall out there in center field that would have been a homer. You know, on the Twitter, shout out to Wood It Dong, at Wood It Dong. It's a great yeah, Twitter account that just shows you Wood It Dong, where the ball
and
would
how
be
many
home,
ballparks or, yeah, and everything.
How many ballparks would be home. It was like 29 out of 30, like, you know, one of those. The opposite of the unicorn, where it's like the 1 out of 30 to the short porch in Yankee Stadium or like pesky pole in Fenway. But yeah, he's held his own, and like now it looks like he's starting to get comfortable. He's got a homer and 2 steals in the last 7 games. Like, you know, so all of that's been recent. He's not striking out too much. Sure, you would like to see him take a few more walks, just at 3.3%. But it's not like he's doing that and striking out 30% of the time. Like, you know, he's still got plate skills that are in line with what he's done in the minors. And like, you know, this is a 5-tool player. He's played every day. He's played center field. Albies is out for the year. Maybe he does move up. But like you said, like, hitting in front of technically Acuna, I know that it's going to hurt the plate appearance totals, but like, it's still a decent spot. Like, probably the best 9-hole in all of baseball when Acuna's in leadoff. So yeah, I really like it. I know he was like a big fab spender, you know, cost a lot in TGFBI or any NFBC leagues, but in those daily leagues, yeah, he's definitely criminally underrated. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I think there's just enough to be excited about, where if, you know, pitchers do adjust, the K rate does go up. It's not like you can't drop them, but right now with the average, the speed, Atlanta's offense and team in general have just been firing on all cylinders. So it just feels like it should be closer to like 50% than 27. So go fix it.
Hey guys, quick production note. We recorded this and the Braves played after. Michael Harris went 3-for-5 with another homer, 2 RBIs and a double. All the more reason to go pick up Michael Harris. Just wanted to throw in that little post-production note.
Gavin Lux is another one, Steve, that we've had our eyes on for a couple years here. And quietly, he's been putting up a nice little run here, even though he's another one who's batting at the back end of the order, usually 8th or 9th. But on the year, batting 296, a 375 OBP, 385 slug, you'd like to see come up. But I love the gains just on the StatCast page of what he's done with like his whiff rate and also just his ability to take a walk. But yeah, last 2 weeks also has a OPS over 1,000. So this has kind of been the litmus test for Lux this year, because the Dodgers are probably trying to evaluate if they want to keep him or move on, what it means for renewing Trey Turner's contract. But Lux is kind of doing it. It's not really a breakout from like a pop standpoint, but I would say he's kind of adding value here. What do you think on Lux?
Definitely. It's just hard to buy in with the underlying numbers, but I don't know. And then there's also the fact that like his best power season came in 2019 in the PCL with the rabbit ball. Like, you know, it's hard to buy into someone that's put up like a career 4.5% power rate in the majors to be this power hitter that we thought he was when he hit 26 homers across, 110 minor league games in 2019. So I think it's still like it's still a buy for me. Like I'm still in, but I just don't know if there's like even 20 homer pop in the bat.
Yeah, I'm wondering because he's already eclipsed his previous season high on steals. If you know, maybe he's going to start contributing more in that department of like average and speed. Like it,
maybe he's like Tommy Edmund. Like is that peak Gavin Lux? Like do we have to like just reassess what he is as like a potential prospect and what his peak is looking like?
Well, now Tommy Edmund's peak is moving that bar up. But yeah, I mean. I think just when you see what he's done in past years versus this year, you know, in 50 games, he's got 5 steals and 6 attempts, batting .296, much better contact rate. So it's like, to me, I'm wondering if, yeah, we maybe just need to reassess and think, could this be 15, 20 steals, maybe 10 homers? The counting stats are a little bit of a roulette with batting ninth, but also batting in the Dodgers lineup. So, yeah, I think it's serviceable. Again, I think it's based on team need, but there are guys with much less upside that Agreed. You can add at this time of the year.
Yeah, it just might not be the power upside that we thought with Lux. Like, looking at his, like, just Fangraphs page, like, you know, the homer total, it's like 7, 11, 4, and then 2019, 26. You know, like, it's the outlier. That's the outlier. There, but still, you know, as he matures too, you know, he's still just what
24
years old. So like the power peak is still ahead of him. Like, sure, I think the best Gavin Lux season might be a 2020 season with like a 300 average, which is really really good.
Yeah, well, let's talk about another help for speed in John Birdie. And Steve, this has kind of been your name recently, and for good reason. 10 swipes in the last 30 days. This feels like classic John Birdie, man. Yeah. Is this one any different, or is this, back to the well for the steel specialist for Roto help?
Yeah, I mean, I remember in 2020, or at least heading into the season, there was a lot of hype around Birdie because he had 6 homers and 17 steals in 73 games. And, like, that was, like, the last 73 games of the season, pretty much. That was, like, the Marlins just played him every day, and they weren't good, so it was exciting, but that might be coming to fruition now. He's playing every day, batting first against a lot of lefties, sitting sixth or seventh versus righties, and is stealing a ton of bases with an average in OPS that isn't going to kill you. 278 and 798 on the year. The best walk rate of his career, which you love to see for a guy that steals bases. Like, this might be what I hoped for Jorge Mateo, just with much better plate skills and, you know, a guy that isn't going to hit around 220. Even if the power kind of, you know, levels off like it sort of has in the last 2 weeks, you know, it's been just a 660 OPS over the last 30, but 758 over the last 14. So, like, for a guy that stole 10 bases, that is, you know, must roster, essentially.
Yeah, and even with that, I think the barrel rates are kind of encouraging where, you know, so far this season he's at, like, a 7% barrel rate, which, of course, is average, but coming off all the other seasons when he's been, like, a 3% barrel rate guy. Yeah, it's upside and a hit tool that, like you said, is kind of what we were hoping for Mateo. I think that's a great call. So let's move over to some pitchers, Steve. And I know we're kind of running a shorter episode tonight, but I think we got to talk about Graham Ashcraft, because Ashcraft in just five starts has put together a really nice ERA with a 2.22, a 1.02 whip, and the strikeouts haven't really been there, but it seems like there might be a little bit room for more. This one, as we talk about the whole stream and see what happens, he's been one lately that we've been saying it's like a pop-up pitcher that it's definitely worth taking a shot. But what are your thoughts on the 24-year-old for the Reds and kind of what you see with his arsenal, his upside? I know he's kind of had some volatility on his strikeout rates like throughout the minors, but it's been really low so far, with just 4.5 strikeouts per nine.
Yeah, I think that's got to come up just because of the fact that he has three pitches. He throws his two fastballs hard, a cutter at 98 and a sinker at like 97, with a slider that gets whiffs and should get more like strikeouts than it actually has. It's good. I know he said two starts ago he messed around with it, got some more spin on the slider, and there's been one game with good results and then one without good results, but they've been his two best strikeout games of the season. At least two of the last three games have been his two best strikeout totals. Still just 5-4, but you know, and it was Arizona and Washington, so not the best opponents. But I think mm-hmm. there is some strikeout upside. It's not going to be like a strikeout per nine, but might be similar to the 20 or 25% that he's shown in the minors. Kyle Boddy, who runs Driveline and was a pitching coordinator with the Reds, has tweeted about him and talked about how Ashcraft loves to work on his craft. No pun intended, I guess, pun intended, whatever. And we'll surprise some people. So I'm in. I've streamed and I'm holding. I know there's some tougher matchups coming up. I think he has...
He's got Milwaukee next, which shouldn't be bad.
Yeah, Milwaukee and then San Francisco. So it's a decent test, and Milwaukee's at home, which isn't great. But I know Milwaukee hasn't been as good recently. They sort of picked it up with Adames coming back on Sunday. But I'll be interesting to see what's going on there. I know it was a two-step last week, and he had one good, one bad versus Arizona and the Cardinals. But still, I'm interested in Ashcraft. I think there might be at least like a league average K-side, K-rate upside, which, yep. You know, with his command is going to be – it would be a really valuable pitcher.
Yeah, definitely has our attention there. And, again, another guy who's pretty available out there. Let's talk about his teammate, Steve, Hunter Green. This one was absolutely on the radar coming into this season. It looked pretty ugly, and while the velocity was there, he was getting hit really hard, and he still is kind of prone to some of those blow-ups, but we've really seen probably his best two-start stretch of the season. He kind of goes hot-cold, but his last outing at St. Louis, which has been a really tough offense, five innings, seven strikeouts, a 1.8 ERA. Before that, he got to pick on the Diamondbacks, but he did what you wanted him to with seven innings, eight strikeouts, and a shutout there, just a 0.14 whip, so that must have been like a one-hitter. So what are you seeing? Are you seeing any developments or tweaks for Hunter Green? Because this is a guy that has the skills and kind of the basically the stuff and the velocity to be much higher rostered than the 55% that he's at right now. So what are your thoughts on Hunter Green?
Yeah, there was a pitch mix change. At the end of April, he started throwing his slider more. I think it's been his primary pitch since then. He still doesn't have that third pitch, which I think the development of the changeup is what's needed and probably what will happen to take him from what he is to the elite top 10 starting pitcher that I think most people think he will be. I would be buying in any dynasty league, period, just because the upside is that, and I think he will get there eventually. But with that pitch mix change, there's been a lot less blowups. The walks haven't really been there. It's been two walks or fewer in five straight, and zero walks, I think, in
two of those starts, which is really good. He also hasn't given up a home run since 5/26. I think he gave up like three home runs in that one. And it was like still a good start outside of those three home runs. I know that it's not a good start when you give up three home runs, but trust me, it was better compared to what you've seen from Hunter Green. There was no walks in that one either. So he's starting to figure it out. Like, he's learning how to deal with it. Where to locate his fastball. I know there was a lot of talk about like the shape of it, but like, you know, it's still a 99 mile an hour fastball. It's going to be good. And Hunter Green's going to figure it out. And I think starting to figure it out.
Well, let's talk about another one that is kind of in the same category as Hunter Green in terms of just the velocity and the stuff. And it's Spencer Strider, who has now found himself with a nice opportunity in the rotation for the Braves. And yeah, he kind of has that, you know, the common flaws of a stuffist like this, where sometimes it can be wobbly from a command standpoint. But in his three starts, 7 strikeouts, 5 strikeouts, and 8 strikeouts. And really, it's looked terrific the past two starts at Coors and then home against the Pirates. But Spencer Strider, for me, Steve, is just a rush to the wire because of how good this stuff is. The 52% whiff rate on the slider, the fastball that sits 98.3, which is up from last year. I think we were all just kind of like, you know, he's almost the Tanner Houck that we wanted this season, but they've just flip-flopped on kind of the relief versus the starting pitchers. But Strider, it seems like, is definitely worth the upside shot, in my opinion. And yeah, another guy who's just kind of under-rostered at the moment. But what are your thoughts on Spencer Strider?
Yeah, it looks like Hunter Green, just like with a little bit better fastball command. Like, you look at their plot charts, I know that's not like the greatest thing to look at just because it varies from start to start overall, but like Strider just peppers the top of the zone with that fastball and looks like he has slightly better fastball command. I still like Green better long term, and the same issue sort of exists for the fact that Strider doesn't have that third pitch, but he really doesn't need it with that fastball and slider. Sure, there might be some blowups just because there are like some high walk outings that may come back to bite him, but yeah, I would be absolutely grabbing everywhere. I was stashing Strider, holding him as a reliever, and you know, on the carousel, actually ended up not having currently any shares. I think I got him in like Raz Slam or something at one of the fab periods, but other than that, not much, and regretting it.
Well, let's round out, Steve, with a couple names that have, you know, kind of been on the radar for 5 years and hover in the range of irrelevant, but we've seen some promise recently from Nick Pivetta. Last 5 starts at 2.45 ERA, a 2.11 ERA in May versus a brutal 8.27 in April. Any interest in Pivetta, or the other one being Ross Stripling with Hyunjin Ryu out for the year? Stripling is kind of in that stream ballpark. I think he has the Yankees up next, which would be pretty rough, but what are your thoughts between Pivetta and Stripling? Any interest here, and maybe next to some of the other names we've talked about, Ashcraft, Green, Strider? How would you kind of assess and compare these guys?
I definitely like Pivetta. I think probably the best. Strider and Hunter Green, I think I like for upside more. I think Pivetta may come down to earth. He has had stretches like this, especially last year, and then sort of fell apart in the second half. But it's been really encouraging the last few starts. He's decreased the curveball movement and bumped up his fastball and slider. And his fastball has a negative 10 run value this year, which is really, really good. So you kind of like to see that pitch mix change and relying on that heater more. And it's coincided with better results. So, I felt trapped to the Nick Pivetta America sleeper like 4 years in a row, like, you know, back when he first came up. So I've kind of been out on him since, but I think, it's safe to be back in on Pivetta. No questions asked.
Pivetta over Strider for you?
No, I'd rather have Strider. I'd rather have Strider.
That's where I'm at, but I do.
It's close though. And like probably the better play is like the boring play. It probably is. Strider for ceiling, Pivetta for floor, as much of a cop-out answer that is.
Okay, that's fair. All right. Well, I think that rounds us out. Anything else to add, Steve? I know we got life coming at us fast outside of fantasy realm, but yeah, it's great talking some of these mid-June heat check names, and hopefully some really good value here for, you know, middle of the roster additions.
Yeah, yeah. Good to get back to, like, you know, the meat and bones of our show, like we said earlier, like the player analysis, discussing, like, interesting guys. It's great to get back to that after doing more high-level shows. Not that I don't like those, too. But, yeah, it'll be fun. Glad we did it, and looking forward to talking some more and seeing how these guys play out.
Yes, and we will be back next Thursday. Every Thursday, you guys can always email us, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com, if you want any topics on here. Otherwise, you can follow us on Twitter @winsabovepod. I'm @van_verified, and Steve is @stav8818. On behalf of Steve Gisuelli, signing off for Wins Above Fantasy, episode 60. Thanks so much, guys, for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.